At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon. The unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, the Dallas Safari Club, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy, Hornady, Accurate, Deadly, Dependable, Trigicon, Brilliant Aiming Solutions, Ruger, Rugged, Reliable Firearms, Burnham Brothers Game Calls, The Callingest Call Made, Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
For those of you who were with us last week, we did some absolutely fantastic fishing with Chris Moody for crappie, and I need to tell you, they were absolutely delicious. Now, getting back and frying crappie for my wife and me, and I walked into my office and saw a mule deer, a mount of a mule deer, if you know what I'm talking about, and it reminded me of all the great times that I spent hunting mule deer over the years. I've been very fortunate. I shot my first mule deer. You know, that reminds me of a song that goes, you take the high road and I'll take the low road, and that kind of thing. And as it worked out, I was hunting in far western Texas on that first mule deer hunt with Jerry Grestad. At the time, I was working for Wildlife Diseases, and Jerry was one of the students at Texas A&M who was a student laborer, if you want to call it that, but also a very, very dear friend. And he and I got in on a lease in far western Texas with a bunch of biologists just north of Kent, kind of on the edge of the Apache Mountains there. And I have to tell you, that was a very interesting hunt. And it was one of those situations, we did not have a whole lot of money outside of being able to pay for the hunt. And went out there in my wife's little red Volkswagen, I guess it should say, and didn't have any tent. We had sleeping bags and a couple of tarps and a couple of pots and pans where we could fix something to eat. And I will remember getting in there that first afternoon right before, so we'd have a little bit of time to kind of look around. I actually got there a day ahead of time before the season opened and set up our camp, if you will, which was a tarp laid out on the ground. And we knew that if it got really cold, we could crawl in between that tarp, the covers, use it as cover, and hopefully the rattlesnakes would stay away and the scorpions and all those other kind of good things. But got set up and went out that afternoon with just a little bit of light left and saw some mule deer off in the distance. And they were so far out there that I really couldn't tell whether they were bucks or does, but you could tell that they were deer. Spent the night, rather chilly, I might add, and got up the next morning, made a big old pot of cowboy coffee and did some bacon and some eggs and kind of some stir toast kind of thing. Stir meaning that we dropped it into the bacon grease, if you will, and kind of browned it a little bit to make our own toast. And started doing some walking. There was a bunch of country that I wanted to see. This was at the time the ranch was called the Yearwood Ranch. It's since changed hands numerous times, but right at a kind of a confluence of a couple little dry creeks in what they call Persimmon Gap, which was kind of a big open area between two, more or less mountain ranges, if you will. And wasn't a whole lot of water in that country. The water was there was around the windmills, and our camp was set up probably about 200 yards from the windmill so that we didn't scare the cattle. This was at the request of the landowner, is to not camp right next to the water. And we got out that next morning after having a bite to eat and some good, strong cowboy coffee, and started walking around and looking to see where we might want to hunt the next day. Well, long story short, we walked a lots of distance that day, crawled up and down mountains, found a few shed antlers from years earlier, and found a few tracks, and saw a few deer off in the distance, and finally got back into, almost back to camp that afternoon, and I'm walking along through some about chest-high vegetation, pretty thick, and lo and behold, a doe just jumped up right in front of me and started bouncing out there in that stotting that they do, and right behind her came a fawn and then another doe, and I thought, my goodness, so finally I've got a close look at some mule deer. So looked at them for a little bit as they disappeared off in the distance, and I thought, well, you know what, I really need to go back and see what a fresh bed looks like, so that if I run across a fresh bed of a mule deer, I'll know that they may be out somewhere in that immediate area feeding. Excuse me, so I walked right back to where the mule deer got up, and no sooner had I done that than a really nice, big, typical 10 5x5 mule deer buck jumped up literally underneath my feet. He came up within probably 2 feet of where I was about to step and ran out there a little way and looked back at me, and I'm going, oh my gosh, if only it were opening day. If only I could shoot him. Didn't have a gun, of course, but so ended up that night. And I went back the next morning, opening day, to the area where I'd seen that deer, and looked for him, and couldn't find him. I found a little far corn buck off in the distance and a couple of does, and we had agreed to meet kind of at the base of one of the open slopes that kind of led to a huge expanse of open country down into the flats. If I'd have known better, I'd have been hunting those flats. Years later, I found out that before the rut really got started in that area, those bigger mule deer bucks hung out down those little creek bottoms down in the flats, and creek being a interesting term because the only difference is there's a deep cut, a little canyon, if you will, and vegetation right along the edges that may be a little bit taller than the stuff that's 5 feet away from it. But we decided that I looked at this hillside, and I knew Jerry was tired, and I was tired. It was noon. We'd been walking all morning, and kind of looked over at him, and I said, do you want the high side? Do you want to take the high road, or do you want to take the low road? And he said, Larry, he said, I'm really tired. He says, I think I'll take the lower road. And I said, well, I'll just walk up, come almost to the top. There was a rim rock, kind of ran along the edge of this long ridge, kind of a mountain, if you want to call it that, before it dropped off in this huge expanse of open country before you could again see mountains. Walked up there, kind of angled up, and I got within about maybe 100 yards of the rim rock, and then I just started kind of zigzagging back and forth, going up to the rim rock and dropping down 100 yards, going back up to the rim rock and dropping down like 100 yards. And after about 4 or 5 of those zigzags, I just happened to hear rocks rolling up above me. And as I looked up there, lo and behold, here is a mule deer. It's not only a mule deer, it's a real nice mule deer buck. I can see that on the side that I'm looking at that's facing me, he's got 5 points, meaning he's got a good deep fork, very long front points. It looked like he's reasonably wide, not overly huge wide, but reasonably wide, pretty good mass. At the time, I was hunting with a Savage Model 99 lever action in a 300 Savage top with a 6-power Weaver scope, a K6 Weaver fixed power scope. And this deer, excuse me, we just had a front blow in here, and I guess it doesn't like me. Spotted this deer, and he's about 125 yards up there, and I'd been shooting that Model 99 Savage lever action, and knew kind of where it shot at different distances, but I knew it was sighted in at 100 yards, and I kind of walked over very quickly to A little bit of a stick up there, some of the with the Okatilla that's also called Devil's Walking Cane. Doesn't really have any limbs. It just has thousands of fair-sized thorns on it, if you will. And I was wearing leather gloves, so I grabbed a hold of that Okatilla and kind of worked my way around the thorns and got the crosshair set up on that deer and gently tugged the trigger. And, oh, my God, the deer went down immediately. I shot him through both shoulders, and he just kind of went down, and I went, oh, my gosh. And so I hurried, levered in another round and waited just in case for him to get up. If he did, and waited there for about 3 or 4 minutes and figured out that he wasn't going to get up anymore. And I walked my way up there, and it took a lot longer to walk up there than it takes to tell about it. I'd slip and slide, go up about 3 or 4 steps and slide back too, and finally got up there to that deer. And for years, ever since I'd been a little kid, I watched friends of my dad go to Colorado, and they'd come back from Colorado with these huge mule deer racks, huge mule deer. And having read all the things I did as a little kid from Jack O'Connor and a whole bunch of the other writers of that era, I wanted to hunt mule deer. Not only did I want to hunt mule deer, I wanted to take a mule deer. Well, finally, I had the mule deer down. I walked up there and got to his side and said a prayer of thanks, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I have finally done it. Look down, and sure enough, it's a really nice mule deer. He's got 5 points, including brow tine on one side and 4 on the other. He likes the back split on the other side. I guessed him probably to about 22 to 20, 24 inches outside, good main beams, kind of swept all the way around, had particularly good long front tines, which over the years I've grown to appreciate more and more all the time, those mule deer that have those longer front tines. I was absolutely thrilled. I'm sure I let out a Aggie war whoop that you could probably hear almost back to the motherland or fatherland there in College Station, about 500 miles away. Got a few pictures by myself. I had a camera that I could set up to get photographs with and self-timer and gutted my deer, and then I started the process of trying to get him off the mountain, and finally got him about 3/4 off that ridge, and Jerry had heard the shots, and by then he'd come over there running up there, and he goes, oh my God, you got him, you got him. We had a celebration there, dragged my deer to camp, and I stayed there that afternoon and took care of the cape and the meat, and Jerry went out and hunted that afternoon, hunted the next day, and unfortunately really couldn't find another mule deer buck. He saw several mule deer does, but during the process time he was hunting, I cut up our deer, and I have to tell you that fresh backstrap was pretty darn good, pretty good, particularly in a dry camp where the water we had came from a water trough about 200 yards away, and our tent, as I said, was not a tent at all. It was just kind of a tarpaulin thrown on the ground that we could sleep on top or in between, and I couldn't wait to get home. Had a dear friend of mine, Eugene Fox, mount the deer for me, and to this day, it's one of my favorite deer. I've always been enthralled with hunting mule deer and seeing mule deer and spending time in mule deer country, and enthralled simply by the species. To me, as you may have heard me say in the past, there is nothing more impressive in North America than a truly big mule deer buck, one that's probably right at 30 inches outside and big old tall tines, because he's one of those Chuck Norris things, because when he's up on a ridge somewhere, or he's standing there and he's turning his head, he's not turning his head, that world revolves down around him. Oh, mule deer's had the opportunity to hunt him over the years in Colorado several times, in New Mexico and a couple of other places down in Sonora, Mexico, and favorite has always kind of been Western Texas. Now, I had a chance to work with desert mule deer a little bit on the wildlife management area called the Black Gap down in the Trans-Pecos of Texas, and shot several does down there for research purposes where we're trying to get an idea on reproduction, but also to get a better idea in terms of nutrition, what they were eating and how much they were eating of different things. So it was a good education in that respect. A few years later, they formed an organization called the Mule Deer Foundation. Now, I've been involved in one form or fashion with the Mule Deer Foundation just about the time since they got started many, many years ago, and mostly from the outside. years later, after they started, I became a life member of the Amelia Foundation. And for a while, a guy by the name of Mark LaBarber was their editor. Mark and I had worked together at the North American Hunter when he was the editor there many years ago. And when he was editing the Mule Deer magazine for the foundation, I was able to do several articles for him. Well, recently, after I was looking through the magazine, and I noticed my name was still on the list as being a media representative, if you will, or a writer. And so I got in touch with Brian Feinhold, who's the COO of Mule Deer Foundation, and Brian and I had gotten to be friends through Dallas Safari Club, running into each other at DSC and other functions, kind of very similar. And he and I share very much the same beliefs in terms of conservation. Hunters pay for conservation, and both of us love mule deer. And maybe he a little bit more than I do because he actually works for the Mule Deer Foundation. But got in touch with Brian, and he and I had an absolutely fantastic conversation a few mornings ago, actually. I almost said a few minutes ago because it seems that way. But as a result of all that, I'm going to start trying to do a little bit more work with the Mule Deer Foundation. They're great partners of the Dallas Safari Club, of which I am very fond and very, to me, there's no finer organization in the world when it comes to anything having to do with wildlife conservation than the DSC. And of course, I also now serve on the board of directors of the DSC Foundation. So as a result of all that and my love of mule deer, got to visiting with Brian, as I mentioned, and I'm going to start doing some articles for them for their mule deer publication there again in the future. And something I'm really excited about because they really have stepped up. They recently changed the format of that magazine, and it now is a wonderful, wonderful magazine. Not that it wasn't before, but they've added a bunch more pages, gone to a quarterly as opposed to every other month. But in the process, they added a considerable number of more pages to the magazine, which allows them to publish more articles, including on things having to do with biology, the current status of mule deer in different parts of the country. And guys like Jim Heffelfinger is doing a lot of work with them right now as well, too. And I noticed Mark Kaiser, an old friend of mine from many years ago from North American Hunter, when we used to do the You Call the Shots segments, that Mark also does a fair amount of writing for him. And so I'm truly honored to again be able to hopefully do a few articles here and there for them as well, too. If you're interested in mule deer, I really think you need to just Google the Mule Deer Foundation and become a member. It's like DSC. If you love conservation and you love the outdoors, you need to be a member of DSC, and you can do that very easily. Just go to biggame.org, and by golly, there are all kinds of levels of membership there that you can join at. So hopefully you'll do that, and hopefully you'll join the Mule Deer Foundation. I've got a bunch of hunts coming up this year. I'm going to hunt Colorado. I'm going to hunt two West Texas, or in the West Texas mule deer, and a lower Texas panhandle mule deer. And then also going to be hunting Baja, used to call Baja California, for their version of the mule deer that's there as well, too. Hopefully you'll join me here again for too very long, and we'll start telling a few more mule deer stories, or we just might be back here in just a little bit. But in the meantime, just want to remind you, please, please become a member of DSC, of the Dallas Safari Club. Just because it has Dallas in front of it, it's a worldwide organization. It does so much good for hunting when it comes to anything having to do with hunter advocacy. So much of what sometimes other organizations take credit for, DSC is responsible for getting done, not only in Texas, of course, but worldwide, and particularly over in Washington as well, too. And they're there defending us all the time as hunters and promoting conservation and the importance of hunting and conservation and how those two really are one and the same and how they work together. Be back here with you in just a few moments. I'm going to go get a bite to eat, and it's one of those days where I finally had an opportunity to sit down in front of the speaker a little bit and talk to you. And I want to come back and tell you another hunting story or two about hunting mule deer. I think I've told you in the past, this is kind of like sitting around a campfire, and that's kind of what it is. in so many different ways. I mentioned I just had to go get a bite to eat. Actually, I'm cooking some venison in a Dutch oven, and kind of need to go check on the status of it, make sure that the coals are properly placed and on the bottom and at the top, and wanted to make sure, too, that I had the right amount of onions and liquid still in the bottom of that thing, and some potatoes and carrots, and no telling where this is going to go. I put a couple slices of bacon inside of a long some seasoning inside of a back strap, and then kind of braised it a little bit, and then put it in the Dutch oven, added some fluid, a little bit of red wine. Sounded like I maybe had a glass or two of it, but a little bit of red wine and some other seasonings as well, too. And gonna let it cook for about another hour or so on a very low heat, and it'll be time to eat. And I wish you were here to join me to where we could sit around the campfire, sure enough, as a friend of mine would say, and do a little bit of maybe talking about mule deer hunting some more. As I told you, my first mule deer hunting experience happened in western Texas, and then I hunted New Mexico a lot. For a while, I was very good friends, still am, with several now former game wardens. They, at that time, were the executive director. Bill Montoya became the executive director of New Mexico Game Department. Ron Porter was a warden at the time. Tim Bearclaw, a few others of those guys I used to spend a lot of time with. We all kind of hunted together. They'd come to Texas and hunt whitetail and turkeys, and I'd go to New Mexico and hunt mule deer with them. And those hunts were absolutely fantastic. I used to hunt a place years ago, and I so wanted to shoot a buck that had double forks on both sides with brow tines. That was kind of my goal in life after I'd shot that first mule deer. That was a 3x4, as you Westerners would call him. But I wanted a true 4x4 or 5x5 so badly. So we were hunting kind of between Carrizozo and Corona, right along the edge of the Mill Pies, which is the old, really rugged, nasty glass, cut you like a knife lava flow area there. That we were hunting just off of it. And we're headed, I was actually walking from one place to the next. We're hunting a ranch where there was a little property in between to where it was kind of like if you put your hand out and made fingers wide apart, you know, there were different little stretches in there where you had to cross either public land or you had to go around the edge of the private land to get back onto the private land you're hunting. And in so doing, I happened to glance up on a hillside, and my gosh, in the property that I had permission to hunt, there were 9 mule deer bucks in a bunch. I quickly looked. Several of them I could tell were little young fork horns, but there were 3 bucks in there that, oh my gosh, they were phenomenal for that area at the time, or at least as far as I'm concerned. One of those bucks was a really nice, massive 9-point. He lacked a back tine on one side, or a split on one side. And the other one was a true 5x5 mule deer. He was split on back, split up front, had a long brow tine on one side and another brow tine on the other side, and then a little kicker coming off the brow tine. I looked at him long enough to determine that, and kind of moved around at the time I was shooting a Winchester, or a 270 Winchester with Hornady ammo, and long before Trigicon became a company or even were producing any kind of scopes, and kind of worked around a little bit and kind of kept an eye on those deer. And they were up there just feeding, not really paying a whole lot of attention. They'd kind of look our direction or my direction every once in a while, but really didn't even try to do any kind of moving or like ever spooked or anything. And by paying attention to the wind was blowing from the upper hillside down to the bottom of the canyon, toward the canyons rather, and so I kind of was easing that way into the wind. Finally got up there within about 125 yards, and I could see the deer in that pinyon and juniper country, and then they would move off, and they'd disappear. And then, oh my gosh, I've lost them. And then all of a sudden, there he'd be again. And thankfully, one of those, there he'd be again. I was set up across an old cedar stump, and had that rifle and scope about where I thought that deer should walk out. And sure enough, lo and behold, this big 4x4 with brow tines and the kicker stepped out and my heart was beating so hard, I'm surprised that I could even keep that crosshair anywhere on the hillside. But finally, it seemed like forever. It probably took a matter of a couple of seconds. I settled down enough to where the crosshair, my reticle movement was maybe all of about 3 inches on that deer's shoulder. So when it was, I very slowly started pulling the trigger and shot went off, and that old deer just went down like he was never going to get up again. And he didn't. But I got ready just in case, and man, there were mule deer bucks bouncing all over the place, and I was kind of, oh my God, is that him, is that kind of thing. But thankfully, none of the other mule deer looked exactly like this one, so I thought, well, maybe he is down, and if he's not, maybe I can pick up a good blood trail, and I'll follow him to wherever I need to find him. Sure enough, got up there, and here's this deer on his side. I mean, it was an absolutely gorgeous deer, good mass, good tan length. Probably only about 23 or so inches wide, but absolutely butterball fat. And I remember it taking me about a little bit longer to take the insides out of them, simply because there was so much fat between, or tallow, if you will, between the skin and the to where you got into the muscle where you could make cuts. The brisket, there must have been an inch of tallow on the brisket. And later I found out when I got him back to camp and took the skin off to start cooling him down and keep the meat in good shape, the on his back there was a good inch and a half, if not more, of tallow. This deer was unbelievably fat. And looking back, you know, to me, he looked like he weighed 400 pounds at the time, but looking back, the deer probably field dressed about 200. He was an absolutely great deer. And a lot of those deer in that area, if you shot a really good one, they'd field dress and mature deer anywhere from about 150 to 180 pounds. And this deer just had so much fat on him that when I finally got him back home, I had to spend a lot of time taking the fat off, because learned that for the most part, you get a really gamey flavor sometimes if you leave a lot of fat on venison. So I took great pains to trim the venison off. I mean, separate the venison from the tallow, if you will. That camp was with a dear friend of mine who has since passed away, David Manahans, and another gentleman, Chuck Dowshaw, who recently passed away as well, too. Chuck, for years, was a fisheries biologist and a wildlife biologist, and David was a rancher out of Abilene, and the three of us, Chuck and David and I, used to hunt a fair amount together on the properties that David and his family owned and that they managed. But, you know, those kind of hunts, when you start talking about them, I start remembering all the little cool things about that hunt. We had hunted that particular ranch, oh, probably about 3 or 4 different times in the past. And every year we shot, as it worked out, some really nice deer. Now, years later, I had the opportunity to hunt not that far from that particular ranch for some really nice mule deer. Hunted out there for a while with the High Desert Ranch. And huge, huge ranch in terms of numbers of acres. And there were some areas there that had some really good deer population. There'd be pockets of them. And over the years that I hunted out there, I hunted out there about 5, 6, 7 years. And those years that I hunted out there, every year I shot some really good deer. The widest desert mule deer I ever shot was a big 3x3 that I shot on a place called Rattlesnake Ridge. He was a 3x3 with little bitty brows and was right almost 31 inches outside. Now, the interesting thing about that hunt was we hunted a place there called Rattlesnake Ridge. And the reason it was called Rattlesnake Ridge is because of the fact that it was a big snake den. That area, too, had lots of ruins, Pueblo ruins, if you will. And I guess those snakes would figure out how to get in between some of that adobe. And they did really, really well there in terms of production and in terms of maintaining snake populations. We knew a little bit about this deer. The ranch owner had seen him in the past, and he told me, so Larry said, there's a really nice wide 3x. He said, I know you're looking for one that's a good 4x with splits and all that kind of thing. And he said, you know, if you keep coming back with me, we're gonna shoot one there in this area. But I think if you see this wide buck, you might just take him. So we were working our way into that area where he had last seen him, and She, gosh, looked up on the ridge, and we just had to be glass in that direction, and you could see these tips of these antlers start coming up from the other side, kind of rising up, appearing over the top of a little ridge right there. And finally, this buck walked out and looked over at Brian, and the owner, and he goes, "Larry, that is him." He said, "You really need to shoot that deer." And he said, "If you want to." I said, "Oh, my God, do I want to? That deer is huge, long, giant, massive, wide, 30-inch wide. Oh, my gosh, yes." Curly set up, and I was shooting a Ruger number one in a 270, one of the RSIs with the Hornady ammo, and 130 grain, got a good solid rest, and at about 200 yards, literally just dropped this deer in its tracks. And took us a little while to get up there. And it was one of those mornings where it was relatively cool. It was, we'd hoped maybe the snakes had already gotten into their dens, but we're still being very careful, picking our way through the brush and the rocks and the litter and up on to get on top of this ridge get up here to where this deer is, laying on its side. I look over there and I go, "Oh my gosh, he's absolutely beautiful." And then I noticed there's something laying on top of this deer. Get a little closer, and it is about a 3-foot rattlesnake gets coiled up there on top of this deer, just about in the flank. I guess there was some warmth there, that snake was looking for a warm spot and was up a little bit higher up to where it could get more sun on itself. And he's up there, and we can grab a stick. And since they're way out in the middle of nowhere, there's no need to kill a rattlesnake. So it kind of just pitched him out in the brush a little way, and hopefully he'd stay there. And I go, "Oh my God, now I've got to look at my deer." And I'm looking at my deer, and I'm grabbing the antlers and moving them back and forth. And about that time, Brian said, "Larry, you want to get some pictures?" I said, "Oh, yeah, but let's set him up like we need to." And I said, "Let's put him on his brisket." Pull that deer up to where I could set him on his brisket, and guess what? There's about a 3-foot rattlesnake right underneath where that deer was, and I'm sure it had crawled underneath that deer to catch what warmth it could. Again, took another stick, pitched that deer out there, pitched that rattlesnake away from that deer. And we got our photos and got off that ridge as quickly as we could before the day warmed up anymore and the snakes were coming out even in greater numbers. But that entire ridge, they locally called Rattlesnake Ridge, and we found out that there was a really good reason for it to be called that. So, oh my goodness. I shot a couple of other really nice bucks there in that place. One was about 28-29 inch. Whitetail looking 10 point. I mean, he had no splits, but he looked just exactly like a whitetail buck with three primary tines and a main beam and then brow tines and about 28 inches wide. And then sunning out there one year with a handgun, and I was using the Ruger 44 with a 240 grain XTP Hornady ammo. And again, this is before Trigicon really got into the scope business as far as hunting is concerned. And Brian had told me, we're going to set up at a water hole. He said, "There's a water hole." He said, "The mule deer have really been coming to as of late." And he said, "We'll find us a spot there kind of in the sage where we can kind of lean back against the sage bush." And he said, "Sit there together." And he said, "I'll kind of look one way, you look the other way." And he said, "There's one buck in here I really want to take." He said, "I tell you, that deer is probably right at 180. He's an old deer." He said, "I don't think he's ever going to get any bigger. His one side does not split as widely as the other does, but he is probably 27, 26 inches outside, and long main beams, long tines." He said, "I think if you get an opportunity at this deer, I think you'll probably take it." I happened to be there back years ago for a while. I did a show called A Hunter's Life that we filmed for a couple of years in between some other shows that I was doing. And I just had the cameraman with me, and he was kind of behind me there, not very far away, just right behind me, actually. And sure enough, that afternoon, that little sagebrush flat where the water hole was just literally got covered up with deer. we saw probably 30, 40 mule deer in one time, several bucks, including some that were truly, truly tempting. Really nice back tine split, front splits, brow tine, massive bucks that, oh my gosh, would have probably been anywhere from 22 to about 26 inches wide, but lots of mass and lots of tine length to them. And then, of course, a bunch of young bucks as well, too, which I always love to see, because if I'm seeing young bucks, that means they're going to be some older bucks there in the future. Set up there, and just probably about 20 minutes or so before the sun went down, this buck walked out, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's as good a big a buck, as big a buck, best buck that I've ever seen on this ranch. I mean, he was absolutely huge, really dark, nice, chocolate-looking antlers, kind of polished ivory tips. And I'm going, surely this is not the one that he's talking about. About that time, I felt a sharp jab in my right side, and I'll turn around, and it was Brian. He said, Larry, that's the one. That's the one you want to shoot. He said, get set up. Well, I already had my little shooting stick set up, and had that pistol kind of halfway leaned up against it, so I didn't have to hold the pistol the whole time, and waited for that deer to move around. Finally got within about 100 yards of us, and when he did, he gave me an opportunity at a broadside shot. I'll have to admit, I'm glad I had a little bit extra time, because when I realized that was a deer I wanted to take, or that Brian wanted me to take as well, I really had the shakes. You talk about a bad case of buck fever. Well, with the time that I had waiting for him to turn around to a proper position where I could pull the trigger and put a clean shot on him to put him down quickly, my buck fever thankfully subsided just a little bit. So, had the gun on the sticks, had a four power scope, little long eye relief scope, cocked the hammer, it wobbled all over the place, but then it finally settled down on the deer's shoulder. And when it all came together, took a deep breath, held as steady as I could, pulled the trigger. And as soon as I shot, the deer went down and immediately was up again. And before I could get, so quickly he was gone that I didn't get a chance to get a second round into him. And I thought, oh my gosh, now I've shot what to me is the mule deer, or desert mule deer of a lifetime from New Mexico, and he's run off. Oh, please, Lord, let me find him. So we sat there for just a little bit, and it was almost just exactly dark. But just enough light to see. And he said, Larry, I want to give that deer some time, is what Brian had said, to go lay down. And I'm going, okay. I was so excited still, just the fact that I had finally got to shoot this big a deer and to shoot him with my Ruger Super Blackhawk Hunter and 44 mag. I knew that 240 grain XTP bullet that Hornady produces and in their loads, super, super accurate. I'd shot 1-inch groups at 100 yards with that particular combination in the past with that handgun. But that was at paper and not at a huge mule deer. So I'm going, please, Lord, may it shot as accurately as the gun is capable, and may I have done my job. So with just precious little light remaining, we got up and walked to where the deer, you could see where he fell. I mean, there was a spot on the sand and in between the sagebrush where you could tell where that deer had gone down, and a little bit of blood, as I mentioned, and a blood trail that kind of took off into the junipers. We walked for probably about 40 yards and on a blood trail, and then it totally disappeared. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, what's gone on here? Where'd he go? What's happened? So we just started circling. Trying to again find tracks, because there were hardly any tracks right there that you could discern as being that deer. There were a whole lot of other tracks there from a lot of the other deer. But for that one particular deer, you'd have thought, well, maybe he's dragging a leg or something a little bit. No, we could not tell his track if it was there from any of the rest of them. But we started circling and just kind of made our circle bigger and bigger and bigger, and kind of walking in tandem side by side as we're circling. Brian was on the outside of the circle each time, and all of a sudden I heard him go, uh-huh. And I thought, what do you mean, uh-huh? I thought, what did he find? You know, and he goes, he said, Larry, he said, you better come over here. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, did I shoot the wrong deer? Did I shoot a deer that I wasn't supposed to? Did I accidentally not see a deer back behind him? The bullet penetrated all the way through them and hit this other deer, which I've had happen, thankfully not in New Mexico, but in Texas, where you could take multiple deer with that 44 mag. And thought, oh my goodness, what gives? What's going on? So I walked over there, and as I got over there, I could see Brian smiling. And as I got a little bit closer, he was pointing down at the ground. And at his feet lay this mule deer buck that I'd shot at. Absolutely a monstrous central New Mexico desert mule deer. Gosh, brings back so many memories. Spent a lot of time on that hunt, sitting around the campfire too, telling stories with several people and telling us tales of great stags bested and great stags lost and places that we really want to go in the future. But that's kind of where I'm going to end this one right here today, is we'll come back and talk mule deer some more. But and I've got several good hunts set up. I'll tell you a little bit more about those as we get a little bit closer into the summer and into the early fall. But in the meantime, I want to really encourage you to go to dsc.org. Nope, that's not the right one. Big Game, BIGGAME.org, to sign up to become a member of DSC, the world's finest and greatest hunter conservation organization, bar none. And if you're interested in mule deer in any remote form or fashion, please look up the Mule Deer Foundation. It's the Mule Deer Foundation, and sign up there as well too. And if you don't mind, if there's a question there, who sent you, tell them Larry sent you. So between now and the next time we sit around this campfire, I hope that you become a member of DSC and of the Mule Deer Foundation. We'll be right back here with you next week with another tale or two to tell. Who knows where we'll go or where we'll end up.
DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. Texas-raised hunting products, the Scent Gods, Kittatrek Boots for the trails less traveled, Voigt, the finest in hunting gear, Pyramid Air for all things air gun, and Ripcord Rescue Travel Protection.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.